Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking formerly fire, fast food inflation, and happiness. It doesn't come cheap.
Okay, so fast food inflation makes me think of Fast Food Nation. Remember, did you watch that movie? It was a documentary?
No, I saw Super Size Me, but...
Wait, is that the one I'm thinking of? What's the one where the guy ate nothing but McDonald's?
Super Size Me.
Is that Super Size Me? Okay. Well, never mind. Yeah, we're like on day three. Well, the premise was that anytime they asked him if he wanted to supersize it, the idea was to say... Sure.
Yeah.
And he would have to eat it. And
he gained like 30 pounds. His health fell apart.
Oh my gosh. And like all of his, the metrics or whatever that the doctors were following just tanked. Yeah. But I'm just specifically thinking when the caloric consumption caught up with him and they're in the parking lot and he just lost it on day three after eating like a McGriddle. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, that has stuck with me and I have yet to order a McGriddle ever since.
I feel like that was like the first groundbreaking documentary. Like there were great documentaries up until that point, but that was like the first cultural crossover documentary where everyone was like, it made the documentary cool again, I feel like.
Yeah. And it kind of felt like, what is it? It's almost like a reality TV show, but documentary, right? Like, because it was very self-experimental.
That's true, yeah.
Anyway, we are going to be talking about fast food during this episode. Dude, real quick though, before we launch into it, let's take a minute and recognize all the folks out there who, so the Spotify year-end wrap, basically, the Spotify wrap. You're either annoyed by it, you probably are tired of seeing your friends and what it is that they're listening to.
Okay, everyone listens to Taylor Swift, I get it.
Or maybe you're just secretly jealous because Apple Podcasts doesn't have that. Which, if you are listening, by the way, via Apple Podcasts, just switch over to a better podcast player.
Actually, I've been going back to that one. It's better than it used to be.
Apple Podcasts?
Yeah.
You've been listening on that?
Well, because Google Podcasts was my podcatcher and it's going away. And so I've tried to like experiment with other ones.
I didn't know that.
And I was like, oh, I guess I'll give this one a shot. And that's what I've been using.
Really?
And it's actually not too bad.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Well, good for Apple. I mean, I'm an Apple fanboy and I've been so critical of it over the past, like, 10 years, because they have poured zero effort into making it a better app, but glad to hear that
better than it used to be for sure.
Anyway, we have just seen a lot of folks posting, and to see how many folks have listened to our show, man, the number of minutes in some cases is staggering. Like, there was one that you shared with me that blew my mind.
Yeah, so people are sharing on the Facebook group, they're sharing on Instagram, but Drew in the Facebook group, listened. To How to Money, 11,300 minutes last year.
Which is crazy.
That's insane. Like,
year's not even over. You know?
I feel like we're like the invisible hand guiding his life, Adam Smith style.
So I did
freaky.
I did the math on that, 11,000 minutes. That's a little over 30 minutes every single day without missing a beat. I don't know. It's worth mentioning because we know that we have the best job in the world, but it's good to have these little reminders that there are actually folks out there listening to us talk and hopefully making money moves to better their financial futures. Yeah. It is encouraging and it's humbling at the same time to see our podcast, our little green cover art out there next to some of the best podcasts in the world.
Yeah.
So just a massive thanks to all the listeners out there.
Seriously.
Could not do it without y'all.
For sure. No, it's always fun to see that at the end of the year. Thank you guys for sharing and for listening and for being a part of the HTM community.
We'll keep it going.
Yeah. No, we're going to keep going. I mean, this is, again, best job in the world. It's also fun.
The big scope of things, we'll keep it going. Not like this episode.
No.
I'm saying we'll continue making the show.
I'm just hanging up the headphones right now. Just walking away. Thank you to everyone. Let's move on, Matt. Let's get the Friday Flight, a sampling of stories we found interesting this week. Let's start off talking taxes. Real quick, some interesting news. It's pretty rare that the IRS delivers a present at the end of the year. Usually it's a turd wrapped inside of a box or something like that.
The tax refund is as good as it gets typically.
Yeah. And even that, you're like, this was...
Guess that's money I could have been hanging on to this whole time.
Yeah, so it's people overweight how good a tax refund can be. But there's good news for users of Venmo, Cash App, PayPal, those payment apps. The IRS is delaying again a somewhat controversial rule about the reporting of micropayments from these apps. And so the threshold for sending a 1099-K form, it was supposed to drop last year and they scrapped it. And then it was supposed to drop again this year from $20,000 to $600. So if you were just like splitting meals and stuff like that, you could easily cross this threshold and get a 1099-K and then have to fight the IRS to say, wait a second, no, this wasn't a small business. This was like literally just me like, you know, paying my friends back. But that has, again, been pushed back. And so this means that a lot of folks who do kind of split the dinner check, pay for little stuff on Facebook Marketplace, whatever, stuff like that, they're not going to be in this uphill battle against the IRS to prove that they didn't owe tax, right, on the transactions that went through. And the real reason for this rule change was to hopefully get side hustlers to pay taxes, right, on the transactions that they were receiving. But then it catches a lot of other people in the net at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looked like this messy reality was going to hit early next year when folks started paying their 2023 taxes. But the IRS said, nope, not yet. We're gonna hold off on that. We're going to delay.
Exactly. Yeah. The IRS, they essentially agreed that this could become a major cluster for not only them, but with the payment apps themselves, with individual taxpayers across the country being told that, hey, you owe more money in taxes that may not necessarily be legitimate. And they've said that they need more time to effectively implement this rule. That makes sense. You want to make sure you get this right before, like you said, it's a very wide net that's going to be cast and a lot of folks might be unnecessarily caught.
Do a scattershot thing here. You're bound to upset a lot of people and just create a lot of hassle for everyone involved.
Exactly. So next year, they're going to plan to require taxpayers with more than $5,000 in business transactions to report income generated via some of these different apps. And again, oftentimes, like they're looking at folks who have these side hustles who earn a few dollars here and there, but delaying it makes sense. The IRS move, it seems to even have bipartisan support. One Democrat senator said, by raising the threshold, we can prevent the IRS from interfering with minor transactions and cut down on excessive paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And typically that's not the stance of someone on the blue side of the aisle. But I'm actually...
I don't know if I would say that, though.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if I would agree with that.
Generally speaking, Democrats, more government involvement. Yeah, typically more taxes. But again, it being bipartisan, they're able to see, maybe recognize the fact that this is going to be a much thornier issue were we just to go ahead and pull the trigger on
it. There's a lot of people on that side of the aisle too who see the excessive paperwork and the excessive burden on taxpayers as a problem. So I think I'm glad to see that it's a bipartisan issue.
Yeah, exactly.
to kind of say, wait, hold up, IRS, this is a little too much. This is gonna put a lot of pressure, a lot of difficulty on individual taxpayers across the country, millions and millions of them. Matt, let's move on. Let's talk about happiness for a second. What would make you happier right now? Is there anything I can do for you?
More money. Happiness ain't cheap, Joel.
That's right. It's truly not. Like, this is like the age-old question, I feel like, that gets batted around in personal finance circles, and there's every couple of years there's a new study, new information to share on kind of the happiness front and how much income or net worth it takes in order to actually be happy. And there's this new Empower survey. It found that respondents with a median income of $65,000, they said they would need an income of $95,000 in order to be happy. That's a 46% increase, or at least to feel happy and less stressed is what they said. And then even the highest earners in the survey, those with an income of $250,000, they reported needing a 40% increase. That's a boost in pay to $350,000 in order to feel the happiness vibes a little bit more fully too, right? And so Matt, this is the definition, in my opinion, of moving the goalposts, right?
Exactly.
That happiness comes when you reach the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And it just goes to show both of these people in different earning categories. Well, the answer is always just a little bit more, or in the case of this survey, quite a bit more, right? 40 to 46% increase in what you earn. And so I guess we would say aiming to earn more money is a great goal to have, right? And money can solve some problems. But the truth is, we all know this, it can't solve them all. And it's also possible to be so focused on money that you miss out on the things that really matter.
Exactly.
So, I don't know, I guess a word of caution. Be careful what you believe and what narratives you buy into. And if you think that a 40% increase in your salary is going to make you magically happier, I've got news for you. It won't. That's not how it works. And it's not that earning more money is a bad thing, but it's just not going to magically turn on this happiness spigot in your life. That's not what money does. Mm-hmm. I think money reveals more of who you are than it does like create more happiness.
It's a megaphone for the things that you already believe, for the things that you already do. So kind of in conjunction with this makes me think of an article from a few years ago that found that pizza actually motivates employees more than cash does, which obviously it's kind of a silly study. Sounds pretty absurd on its face. Like, I'm not actually going to choose like Pizza Hut over a $20 bill.
Right.
Maybe if it was Antico or Glide Pizza, one of our favorites here in Atlanta.
If it's great pizza, then yeah, that's really motivating to me.
But what was at the core of that study was the fact that it's less about money and it's more about being recognized. It's more about appreciation.
Yes.
And certainly pay. That is one way to show that appreciation. But there are other ways that can feel a bit more tangible. It makes me think of like the meme of, all right, instead of getting a pay raise this year, it's a pizza party in the break room. But there is some truth to that, I guess, is what we're saying. But employers, they can save money, I think, by taking an outside of the box approach to incentivizing and to rewarding the talented folks in their employment. It makes me you used to work for Clark Howard at the radio station. And was it literally every single year that y'all took a trip abroad?
I went to six continents, thanks to Clark. It's interesting. I think if you had said, hey, here's $2,000, or here is the hotel and the flight, because he was always great about booking it on the cheap and stuff like that. I mean, the travel was worth way more than the money my paycheck would have been.
A, you got it at a deal. It was a discount.
Yeah.
But B, it's not just that. It's everything that came along with that. Like, there's like a camaraderie, I'm sure, building memories. The fact that you went to six continents is pretty major. How many continents are there?
Right.
Just one more, right?
He never took me to Antarctica.
So like,
that jerk.
You're going to maybe do that one day, and to be able to say that is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah. And the truth is, if he had just given me the money, I'm too cheap to have like probably taken that trip to Europe or South America or whatever.
You'd have been like, oh, I'll save that up. Let's
exactly.
Put that towards a down payment on the house.
And so I'm not, it's obviously not true that more money or a raise from your employer isn't like a good thing. But in so many ways, like that was far more powerful than more money my paycheck would have been.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. So on that note, there is a good profile of our friend Gwen. She's been a stalwart in the FIRE community for a while, or at least she was. This Fortune article, it detailed her move away from the intensity and the rigidity of some of the tenets of FIRE. And here's a quote. I went at it really hard, and I saved 70% of my income. That's really high, if you're wondering.
That's a lot.
I really bought into the hustle culture that is part of society, and I got really burned out. I just remember going, why am I trying to save all this money? I don't look my best. I'm not taking care of myself as well as I should. What's the point? And we have heard that from other FIRE folks as well. She's not the only one out there. And so she was able to shake things up. And what she says now is that I don't deprive myself unnecessarily anymore. Taking the foot off the pedal, stepping it back, it really benefited me. It gave me the flexibility and the ability to say yes. And kind of going to what you're saying, Joel, if you were so focused on early retirement, you would see $2,000 every single year as, man, think of the opportunity cost. What if I could take that money, stick it in the market? I would have independence. But independence from what? From meaningful work, I guess, in this case, for a lot of folks who adhere to the tenets of FIRE. By doing that, you're simultaneously saying no to a lot of things that you would be able to experience at a younger age. Like you said, that you probably,
I probably wouldn't have
done that.
Like, dude, he took me to South Africa. There's no way I would have gone otherwise, right? And so that's the kind of experience that I'll remember for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And if it was $1,500 or $2,000 in my bank account, I wouldn't have looked at it nearly the same way.
Sure.
And it wouldn't have led to the same results.
We have a lot of friends within the FIRE community, and there is a ton of wisdom that many of those folks are sharing. The vast majority of folks probably need to hear more of that.
Yes.
I need to save more. That is probably the majority of folks. But I will say, I wonder if the majority of our listeners, they've kind of drunk the Kool-Aid. They know the good news of, of compounding, and they're thinking, I have to find a way to up my savings rate. But remember, when you strictly adhere to those kind of principles, that's not necessarily going to help you build the life you want. You got to use it strategically and not have it basically completely overshadow some of your larger goals in life.
Yeah, if the life you want is 10 years away from today, then that's too long. That's too far away. And I'm not saying that it doesn't require like some sacrifice, front loading the sacrifice like our friend Doc G says, but it's also possible to overdo it like Gwen did. And I love kind of reading that profile and seeing like how she's come to grips with like, hey, not all of the things I learned are bad, but it's possible to go too hard and to kind of miss out on a lot of life along the way because I bought into this system, this methodology that was just over the top.
Totally.
It we're talking about profiles here. Matt, I saw this profile in the New York Times, a flow from Progressive. If you've like watched a sporting event or something, you've seen 15 Progressive commercials, you've seen flow. And she's done really well for herself financially because of this gig. And in the middle of that article, there's this convo about money that begins with the interviewer. And Stephanie, who is the actress who plays Flo, she said, it's worth more than money to feel like you have enough. And I think that's true. It makes me think of
sage wisdom right
there. Yeah, it makes me think of Charlie Munger, who passed away at the ripe old age of 99, just like an incredible human and an amazing investor. And he one of my favorite quotes from him, he says, I did not intend to get rich. I just wanted to get independent. And so he ended up being incredibly rich as well. But it's that independence really that you desire. And like we've talked about before on the show, Matt, that financial independence exists on a spectrum. It's not all or nothing. And the FIRE movement kind of makes it seem like it's zero or 100, and it takes a long time to get there. And so I think this push towards independence is a great goal. And Charlie Munger himself, man, he remained independent until the end, like spouting his wisdom in the only a way that he could. He was a unique individual. So I'm gonna miss hearing like what he had to say at the Berkshire Hathaway in investor meetings and stuff like that. Like,
whether
just
it's calling crypto rat poison.
That's right.
Or
I mean, so many good quotes from that guy. Maybe we'll put a link in the show notes to some of his best quotes or something like that. But all that to say, when we're talking about money and happiness, it's so easy to think that more equals better. And especially like in the aftermath of Thanksgiving, maybe gratitude for what we have and maybe seeing things in a different light can actually help us have a more well-balanced take on our finances.
Yeah, it is about balance. What we don't want folks to hear from Charlie Munger, where independence is the goal, is because if you pursue that as the ultimate goal, it's such a slippery slope because you can always, like we were saying earlier, continue to move the goalpost. And again, during that episode that you alluded to, the financial independence exists on a spectrum. We kind of laid out how, okay, you can be credit card financially independent, where you got something that comes up in life, you're no longer reliant on your credit cards. That's a good place to be.
Yeah.
But if you continue to look down that road, you could also be like, oh, I want to get to where I'm job independent or job financially independent. Yeah. Or career. Like, I don't even need to work at all anymore. It's a slippery slope and you could always push things out a little bit further, which is honestly why I kind of like Flo, or what's her name? Courtney.
Courtney, yeah.
She's got like two first names.
It's like Courtney Stephanie
Courtney
or
Rachel.
Or
like, yeah. But I love her quote even better because you can find...
Stephanie Courtney.
Stephanie Courtney. Yeah. But finding enough wherever it is that you are, I think is more important. I think that's something that a lot of folks can identify with because, I mean, let's be honest, there are going to be a lot of folks. And the idea of retiring early without Social Security, that's a pipe dream for them. And they're thinking, well, I'm never going to be able to achieve that. But you can still get to the point to where you feel like you have enough and where you're able to live a content life.
Yeah.
That's what's so great about that mindset as opposed to even seeking after independence, which can oftentimes sound like a very noble goal. But one of the things that sort of bothers me about the independence thing too is that it removes yourself from other people. Like when you're independent, that means you're kind of by yourself, which can be a lonely place. And oftentimes, what is it that leads to the happiest people? It's meaningful relationships.
Interdependence.
And it is an ability to like dedicate yourself to a bigger cause. And in both of those cases, it requires being around other people. It requires not being independent. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes, I think folks could actually find happiness without the independence, though it can be a good goal to have. We're not saying for folks out there to be reckless with your spending. Don't want to say that.
100%. Yeah, so, and I think the shades of gray that we try to kind of paint here on the podcast, it's often not sexy, right? And it's not as, like, hard-lined as a Mr. Money Mustache or something like that, which I've got a lot of respect for that guy. But I think it's also the best way to proceed, right? To kind of talk about things in this holistic fashion. And when it comes to money, happiness is not found in a bigger paycheck, and that doesn't mean a bigger paycheck is evil. But, yeah, there's a lot more I think we could talk about on the subject.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites because it is so full of nuance.
Shades of Grey was also your favorite movie.
50 Shades. And the sequel, also great. No, I didn't see either. All right, we've got more to get to on this episode, including we are going to talk about fast food, inflation, and tipping still remains a thorn in the side of many Americans. We'll get to our thoughts on both of those and more right after this.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
All right, man, we are back. We've got more to get to today. We're going to talk about travel here. Travel, the fees associated with travel. We'll get to that here in a minute. But first, we've got our ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from Business Insider. And the headline read, Dior has released a $230 scented water for babies, which, yep, sounds pretty ridiculous.
Water for babies.
Which, so, do you wear cologne?
No.
I don't think you do. I don't mind cologne. Like, folks who want a little dab of oil or a little perfume, I'm fine with that.
I wore Abercrombie Woods back in high school, but it's been a long time since I've worn any sort of cologne.
That when they discontinued that, folks were selling their bottles of that stuff used on eBay for top dollar.
That's
because
right.
Folks were obsessed with it, right? I remember talking about that with our friend Tripp.
Yeah. I think he gave me like a third of a bottle or something that he had left over because I don't wear this anymore. But then I just stopped wearing it.
So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with cologne. If you think about the soaps and shampoos that we use, I think 95% of the reason that we choose the different brands we choose is because of the way they smell.
Yeah.
Like, they all basically do the same thing. So what is it about it that draws us to them?
My wife would disagree with you on that. But I'm with you on that.
It's the olfactory.
I think those all do the same thing in your hair.
But it's the fact that it's, like, for babies. Like, that's the ridiculousness
of
it.
Well, yeah. Well, it's like 5X the price of cologne or perfume.
That's the other ridiculous part of it.
Being billed as scented water for babies.
It's a baby tax.
And what baby needs to smell? I mean, you know, they have the natural, adorable baby scent when they're not poopy, right? So, yeah, I think it's
But again,
really silly.
Why do they smell that way? It's not because they naturally smell that way. It's because you bait.
No,
like,
babies are like new cars. What? They just come with the scent, yeah.
No, okay, anybody right now, imagine what a clean, fresh, new baby smells like. Really what you're thinking of is either baby powder or Johnson & Johnson baby wash.
Yeah.
Because they have so ingrained themselves into our culture, and we equate that with cleanliness or whatever it is.
I think it's coming out their pores from day one,
gosh,
so that we bond to the baby more. That's I don't have scientific evidence.
I do believe there's some pheromone sort of action going
on. That's what I'm saying.
But it's the price point, because it's just so much more expensive than some of the other luxury scents that they're selling. And that's the part, especially for babies. It just feels completely out of touch.
Babies don't need to impress anybody.
No, and it's just out of touch with what most people are dealing with. Because, like, you're, like, in the weeds. You're in the fog when you have a baby. You're just trying to, like, make sure they're fed, clothed, that they've got a clean diaper.
Yeah.
You're not trying to make them smell like the mall, which is, like, the last thing that I would want my kids to smell like, basically.
So, I mean, it's easily qualified for a ludicrous headline of the week this week, because do not buy your baby scented water to put on them to make them smell better. They already smell great. They're already adorable. They've got enough going for them in the positive category. This is just absurd, over the top. But what else would you expect, I guess, from a fragrance maker who specializes in luxury fragrances? It's like, let's expand the market and get in on all that hot newborn category.
Let's get these babies smell like white musk.
Right.
That was one of the descriptors.
Yeah.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's better than smelling like Elon Musk, I guess. At least this week, he doesn't smell so great. But let's move on, Matt. Let's talk about food inflation. While we're talking about expensive crap, let's keep going down in that vein. There was an article in Business Insider about how fast food isn't cheap anymore. And prices at McDonald's are up 10% this year, following a 10% increase last year, too. And the value section of the menu at McDonald's, it's not all that great either. McDonald's and most of these fast food restaurants have essentially eliminated all $1 items. Like, you can't find anything that cheap anymore, which, let's be honest, what food item that's hot and freshly prepared should cost a dollar? It's a little scary.
I mean, back in the day, there's an argument to me. Like, 20 years ago, sure. You could, you know, get a cheeseburger or something like that for 99 cents.
Not anymore.
In college, I would get the thing of chili. You get a baked potato. You remember that? I'm thinking of Wendy's.
Maybe I was in middle school, but McDonald's had like 29 and 39 cent hamburgers and cheeseburgers on like Wednesday nights or something
Gosh.
Yeah.
How old are you?
Very old.
29 cent hamburgers. Very old. You know, went down to the Five and Dime
or
went to the movies for a quarter.
And Coke was a nickel. No, not quite. But it's just interesting to see this. And the CPI data reflects that it's just so much more expensive to eat out than it even is to buy groceries. We've lamented how expensive it has gotten to get groceries. But when you look at the data year over year, food at home has gone up 2.1% and eating out has gone up 6.4%. And so prices, they're up at Kroger, they're up at Publix, they're up at Whole Foods, wherever you shop, but they're not up nearly as much as they are at your favorite restaurants. And this is not an attempt to judge your eating habits. If you're like a Warren Buffett going to McDonald's every single day of your life, do your thing. Obviously he's in his 90s, so he's doing just fine. But this data is helpful when we're thinking about our budget and how our eating habits affect what we're able to save and invest.
And it comes down to lifestyle and what you want your life to look like, right? Because I'm thinking of like the occasional Big Mac or even the once a week latte. That's not going to make or break your ability to retire or anything like that. But the more we partake, it is going to have a larger and larger impact on our finances.
And on our arteries.
Yes. And as prices rise, I think we should probably reconsider some of our habits. It's not the worst thing to do occasionally, but so many folks just find themselves eating fast food on the reg, and it might seem cheap, but in reality, it's not.
Leftovers are way cheaper.
Way cheaper, man. And I just hear so many folks blame their fast food runs on busyness, but just like everything else out there, we are going to prioritize the things that we actually care about. And meal planning, it is going to be a lifesaver if you are looking for inspiration. I certainly understand there are going to be certain seasons in life where, you know what, let's just swing by, let's just pick up some fast food. But even then, there are other healthier, more affordable options too. Like even just swinging by Costco, grabbing one of those chickens, pulling that thing apart, throwing that on some salad. Like that's literally something we did earlier this week when we were pressed for time. It was a busy week. But that is a way that you can not only eat a little more healthy, but find a way to save some money as well.
If you're in the northern suburbs of Atlanta and you see someone in a gray van just going to town on a whole rotisserie chicken, that's Matt.
Starts macking on the wings like there in the store. He'll crack that plastic tub open. I've seen him do it.
I've always thought that was a faux pas, eating the food in the store before you check out. Like I know some people do it, but
cool.
No, I'm not down with that.
By the way, budget bites. We've had Beth Monsell on the show before, but She has some amazing recipes, a way to cook at home for less money. We can link to the interview. We had her, was it like maybe 2 years ago?
Probably.
We had her on the show.
Batch cooking is another thing that's overlooked. Cooking extra stuff, freezing it so that it's easy to reheat later on, whether that's for lunches, whether that's because you're going on a road trip
it's
or whatever.
It's the best part of smoking.
Yeah.
Literally today for lunch, I had some leftover brisket. And you know what? You kind of get over brisketed when like the week after you do a pork butt or a brisket, something like that on the week. Weekend. And what we've started doing is we'll just slice a big hunk of it off, stick it in the freezer, portion it out into separate meals, and dude, pop that thing in the microwave, you start smelling it, and all of a sudden it's like I've never had it before.
Yeah.
It's like, what is this delicious food?
No, I mean, not much tops smoked brisket.
That is true.
That's for sure. On the note of food, Matt, let's talk about tipping. There's new research from Pew, and they found that Americans say that tipping is expected in more places, but that they also don't feel confident about when and how to tip. They're not alone. I feel that too. I'm like, even though I've kind of developed some rules for how I tip, how much I tip, and where I tip, there's still the awkwardness, the sweaty awkwardness of having the iPad turned around.
That moment of panic.
Yeah. Like, the service worker is just like smiling at you. Yeah. And you're like,
stop looking at me.
You feel like you're under one of those heat lamps, right? Or like you're in being grilled by a cop or something like that. But I feel like the tip suggestions can be wildly overdone. And so suggestions that are also kind of tough to come up against. I'm always amazed when a counter service place suggests a 20 to 25% tip or a 30% tip. I'm more than willing to fork over that much at a sit-down restaurant, but at a local barbecue joint where, like, they call my name and I go pick up my own food, sorry, it feels a little different.
Yeah.
Not willing to do that. So I guess my suggestion here is just, like, come up with your own tipping philosophy ahead of time. Maybe it's a flat $1 for a coffee, 10% for counter service, then 20 to 30% for sit-down restaurants based on how the service is. Those are just, like, rough guidelines. But knowing what you're willing to tip ahead of time helps to eliminate some of that awkwardness. And then, you know, potentially even forking over more than you had planned to do in the moment. And Matt, there are even like stories out there of you're at a kiosk at the airport and there's no actual human that has helped you. And
don't you want a tip?
You still ask for a tip, which just boggles my mind.
I will say, I think sometimes if you walk up to order a coffee, they've got like the 20% or even 25% can be the default because you're just getting a coffee. And
yeah.
So in those cases, whether it's like getting a coffee or a beer, I'm totally fine with saying, all right, no matter what, I'm going to give a dollar.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of
the minimum viable.
When I started drinking in my younger day, like I was paying with cash. And so the ability just to always leave a dollar, I don't know, in my mind, that has carried over to, all right, I'm always going to leave a dollar, at least when I order a beer or get a coffee somewhere.
Tipping a quarter just feels chintzy.
Yeah. Let's talk about travel, because airlines, they're going to make record amounts of money this year in fees. $118 billion to be exact. There's a fee for basically everything when you're buying airfare these days, especially with the big discount airlines. But we're talking about extra money for assigned seats, checked bags, food, even travel insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just still so much competition when it comes to ticket pricing that airlines are trying to find other ways to increase their revenue. The ancillaries is what they call them. And while we're typically fee averse, I actually don't mind this model. I think we've kind of touched on this before, but it allows frugal flyers out there to save big dollars by getting the lowest possible ticket and then jumping through the hoops. You avoid some of those additional costs. It makes me think back to, like, even when I was a kid, Joel, I never flew anywhere. Like, think back to, like, did you fly anywhere as
like
a kid?
Twice as a kid, Ron.
You got in the station wagon or the minivan, you piled in, and we're going to drive there as a family. And
all the way to Montana, Mom?
And
he's like, yes, son.
Or if you're younger, ask your parents, because that was the reality. I doubt that they hardly ever flew anywhere. And it's because you had to be like rich and famous to fly somewhere. It was more out
people
of
used
reach.
To dress up to fly.
Yes, because it was a big deal.
Yeah.
It is now within reach of so many more people, and for that, I love it. I love that folks can travel to go see family, to go have fun, just to go explore a new city, to take advantage of a deal. But what that means for us as individuals is we've got to be more savvy when it comes to some of the different fees out there. Make the upgrade if you want to, but just realize you don't have to. And there are ways to get those airfares low without, I don't know, we're talking about tipping. You shouldn't feel guilt when it comes to like upgrading your seat.
Most definitely.
Even with like Southwest, there's like four options of like, oh, shoot, you got me in here because I saw the low, low price, and now there's three options that are more expensive on the same exact flight in order to, what is it, to like board sooner.
To board sooner.
Some of the other things there. Yeah. But
no, I never pay for any of that crap.
No.
And like, more power to you if you care about that. I got in a friendly disagreement with a relative over Thanksgiving on this very thing. They're like, I hate the super discounters. Like, they make you do all this stuff, and I'm like, we're so fortunate they exist because they lower prices on all the other airlines.
Yeah.
And if you don't do it, if you don't want to, if you prefer convenience and you want to pay more, go for it. But like, just the fact that they exist and you can opt to do that and you can jump through hoops and you can fly across the country for like $60 round trip, that's incredible. Like,
it's amazing.
It's truly revolutionary for how we get around. And so, yeah, these fees, I think, actually allow us to partake in ridiculously discounted travel. You just have to know what those fees are, know how to avoid them, and know which airlines charge which fees. That's easy to look up. It doesn't mean it's not annoying, because it usually is. Like, I hear people fly in Spirit. I still haven't flown Spirit. It's on my to-do list. But like,
it's not bad.
Yeah, that you got to like stick your because you just recently flew on Spirit, right? Or Frontier.
We did Frontier, and they do the same thing where they make you. Yeah, they'll question your bag if your bag's looking pretty large. They're like, all right, stick it in the little.
They're not doing that at Delta.
Metal crate,
but and you're paying
like,
more.
You're like shoving it down.
Yeah,
got to make this thing fit.
Yeah. So just a note, like, fees usually suck, but fees in the right context. And then working to avoid those fees can actually help you save money.
I will say, by the way, Frontier, I was actually very surprised at how nice it was. It was a very pleasant experience.
I'm gonna have to
aside
check it
from
out.
Having to, I did have to check my, you know, not check my bag. I had to prove that it wasn't too big. All right, that's fine. Just don't make me pay more for it.
Yeah. All right. Okay, I got two airlines I need to try now. Let's end on a high note, Matt. After that conversation with Tina, the FAFSA guru this week, there's this great article from Michelle Singletary over at the Washington Post, and it was titled, "I Didn't Go to My Dream School, Now I'm Living Debt-Free." So I was thrilled to see that. And Michelle, you know, she's awesome. She's been on the show before. Mm-hmm. She's always just all about saving money. And she's just spot on in her reporting here. Like, we don't want to blow up the dreams of high school students, but attending a school that's closer to your home or that offers you far more money and financial aid, that can massively increase your life satisfaction in those early post-grad years.
Yeah.
I think so many people, it just sounds so nice to go to the dream school, even if it means taking on tens of thousands of dollars additionally in student loan debt, but that ultimately leads to a lot more difficult years post-graduation and not necessarily a massive uptick in experience. We'd say having little to no student loan debt takes this massive weight off your shoulders.
Totally.
And I loved what Michelle said. She said she wouldn't even allow her kids to consider taking out student loans. It was off the table. It was not a conversation that she was willing to have, which is hardcore.
That's an extreme stance.
Potentially more hardcore than I'm going to be with my own kiddos.
I think I would be willing to let my children make them. Like, I'm going to talk with them about it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, like, we're going to lay it out. We're going to, Excel is going to be involved, and we're going to have forecasting models to show what you could instead do with that money. But I think, like, at some point, they're adults, and you kind of want them to make their own decisions.
Yeah, the hard no feels a little extreme, but I get it. If they're still living under your roof and stuff, like, you're like, hey, that's not an option. But I agree. I would, like, rather help teach them, show them all the options, show them how bad it can be,
and then be like,
and then say, choice is up to you.
It's up to you.
I'm going to have my fingers on the scale, but I want them to ultimately make the decision.
You're going to have to sleep in the bed that you're making with this decision. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. And dude, I think it's especially hard too this time of year with like college football season in full gear. We're at my in-laws over the holidays. College football's on. You see people walking around town. They've got their, you know, they're sporting whatever school it is that they're supporting. That can have such an impact on sort of the mindset, I think, of high school seniors who are looking to the different schools. And they see that culture and they want to be a part of that.
I mean, but who doesn't want to go to the University of Oregon with those dope uniforms? You know?
But when you, again, you are basically forfeiting so much of your future by saddling yourself with so much debt.
And it would be different if you're getting something extremely better that's going to produce greater results for you over the long run. But most of the time, it's like,
Often the case, man.
You're just going to get the communications or the business degree. And you know what? Even though that school is more attractive to you, it doesn't mean that the degree is more attractive to a future employer.
Yeah, you're buying into a brand at that point. It makes me think of the scented baby water.
Yeah.
Like you're just in love with the idea of this. But, buddy, that's going to be it for this Friday flight. Listeners can find all of the different articles and stories we may have referenced in our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com.
No doubt. All right, bud. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, "Somebody's in the house," and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.